Bill, thank you for joining me. I'm super excited to have you here today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Ro. Yeah.
And it's a rainy day here in Richmond.
It sure is, thankfully.
Yes, you know that it's funny because the rain takes my drive, which should be 30 minutes, and turns it into an hour, and it can rain one drop, it can rain a thousand, you know, it just, every time.
Been in a period here where it's been really cloudy for a while, so I'm looking forward to some sunshine too.
Yeah, I'm ready, but I think we're in for winter at this point.
Yep.
So, cool. Well, thank you for joining me. I have just a few questions for you, and, you know, it's a conversation, and we will have fun.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. So, can you tell us a little bit about your background prior to SOAR 365 and how you became the CIO of SOAR 365? Yeah. I have a little bit of insight there, but...
Well, I went to James Madison University, majored in information systems, and graduated in 1983. And now I root for the JMU Dukes.
Who just stomped North Carolina.
And I was there on the front row.
Were you really?
I sure was.
Oh, that's awesome.
In front of the cheerleaders. And following school, I went to work for the International Mission Board and served there for 31 years.
Wow.
And led the software development function you know, as a global nonprofit faith-based agency. We were all over the world, so I've been a lot of places and seen a lot of things. But we had staff in the U.S. and here in Richmond, Asia, and Europe that reported up to me. So I've spent a lot of time traveling and working in nonprofits at scale. I took an early retirement from the IMB because I just couldn't travel that way anymore. It was just wearing me out. And so leveraging our connection, I became a consultant and served at SOAR 365 for almost a year. And then I've been with them as their vice president and CIO, responsible for IT services now for about 7 years.
I can't believe it's been that long.
I know. And it's all about catching up, and it's all been all about a digital transformation.
Right. So I'm on the board of SOAR 365, so they're an organization that's obviously near and dear to me. But can you explain a little bit about SOAR 365 and what their mission is?
Sure. SOAR 365 is a Richmond-based nonprofit, and we provide life-fulfilling opportunities for individuals with disabilities. So every day is different and fun and new. And I remember last year I came into work, and a small farm had brought in some baby goats. And for one of the activities in the day program we had.
And
so there I am holding a baby goat. So that's life, a day in the life at SOAR 365 through our programming activities.
So I'm just going to stop here and say, if anybody ever shows up with baby goats again, please text me because I'm coming over to see the baby goats.
Yeah. So our services range from pediatric therapy all the way through employment services and everything in between. So we operate summer camp programs, adult day youth service programs, and of course we employ individuals. So. Mm-hmm. It's very fulfilling to work.
It's an amazing organization.
Yes.
Do you know off the top of your head, and if you don't, it's okay, roughly how many individuals you serve annually?
I think we're going to be right around 1,700 or more this year. Our goal is to hit 3,000 served within the next 5 years or so. So
that's
incredible. It could be sooner than that because we're on a pretty good ramp in scaling services, particularly for pediatric therapy and early intervention in particular, which is from birth to age 3. And then our employment, a supported employment program is really scaling up now. And that is placing people in competitive work opportunities across the greater Richmond area.
It's such an amazing thing that you all are doing. I mean, I'm very passionate about SOAR 365's mission, obviously, but it's amazing to me. Yeah.
Well, the work we do is rewarding, but it's a very fun environment, especially for me. I get to go to all of our work locations. So my work day, work week can be wildly varied.
Right. That makes it fun, though.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah. How does technology play a role in the services that SOAR 365 offers?
Well, Microsoft 365 is a core platform, and you all help us with that. And at the core of our mission is an electronic care system. And there's a golden thread in healthcare that begins with the diagnosis of a disability. And then there's an intake, and there's a whole intake process that we go through for onboarding new individuals in our programs. There's a lot of documentation that has to be captured, and treatment plans and daily progress notes or notes related to a completed appointment. So for example, if it's a pediatric therapy appointment or a supported employment visit, there has to be strong documentation. So there's a lot of documentation required for serving individuals. And then we have to submit claims for the services we provide so that we can be reimbursed by various funders. And so that is our core platform. We also provide tablets for individuals that are enrolled in our program. So the kids and the adults have tablets with games. These are learning-based games primarily to help undergird what they learn through the day in the activities and the learning opportunities they're provided with. And then we also accommodate individuals who are blind or visually impaired with technologies from Freedom Scientific that help them use computers to perform their tasks every day.
It's always impressed me, I know that PT is out right now, but that you're a receptionist of 35 years?
It's been a long time. I don't know the exact number. I think it's been 40.
Okay. Is blind.
Yes.
And she has been able to do that job quite well for a long time, being blind. How does that, walk me through the technologies that enable that.
So in terms of her using the computer, Freedom Scientific makes these screen reader programs. And so she can't see the screen, but she's got a very good memory. And everything that is displayed on the screen is read back to her. So if I send her an email message, she's going to give me a reply. But the software will have read that message to her, and then she would either have typed that message or recorded that message back to me.
Wow.
Now, while she was out of the office for a while earlier this spring, we had to place the phone system. So we gave her an employee phone directory that was printed in Braille. And we're still working through a couple of things related to the user interface, because these modern voice over IP vendors are not all that strong with accessibility capabilities.
That's interesting.
And it's surprised me a little bit. And so we're working through that. But she's great to work with, and she's fun. She brings a lot of energy.
Yeah, and I use her often as an example of, if you have the appropriate accommodations, for the most part, most jobs can be done with individuals with disabilities. I mean, obviously there are things, you know, you're not going to have somebody out shoveling or whatnot. But office-type jobs are very, very accessible with the right supports, certainly. Yeah. What are some of the biggest technology challenges that you have faced at SOAR 365?
Well, when the pandemic first started, we had not been using Microsoft Teams, and our IT team had been testing the Teams functionality, both the website capability and the video conference capability. And we were trying to solve for, can we make meetings across our five work locations more efficient?
Right.
So that was our problem that we were trying to solve for. But nobody wanted to use Teams.
Nobody would turn on cameras back then.
Nobody. Well, they didn't want it. And we're such a high touch organization that being together with people was strategically important. And so we were just trying to get more efficient use of the workday. And so pandemic breaks out, and within days we were enterprise adoption of Microsoft Teams.
We saw that everywhere.
So
we lit up so many Teams licenses, I can't even begin to tell you.
And I don't even remember. It was a big blur, but we did it. People walked out the door, worked from home, and now the whole agency loves it. You know, the administrative teams.
Yeah.
And we actually use Teams in some of the programming activities in order to unify what's going on at one location with another. So, for example, there'll be group exercise mm-hmm. sessions. And then individuals in different locations can form friendships
right.
over Teams. But other challenges we faced have been around, you know, just because we're so small, supporting everything. We have over 80 technologies.
Wow.
In our service catalog.
Wow.
So that's a significant burden on our team, keeping everything up to date and current while we're implementing new systems.
Right.
And the other factor is we're highly regulated.
Right.
So with the HIPAA regulations and the payment card industry regulations, now we're trying to solve for federal government cybersecurity maturity model certification requirements,
yeah.
CMMC.
Yeah.
So we have a number of contracts with the federal government, and we need to hit a certain level of compliance to right. prove that we are managing federal contract information or controlled unclassified information appropriately. So
right.
those are huge challenges.
Yeah, that for me was probably one of the more stunning things that you all, with the size that you are and the work that you do, have CMMC compliance requirements. That blew my mind.
We're very complex. In many ways, we're like a Berkshire Hathaway at small scale, you know, owning or operating a variety of,
right.
of business in order to deliver on our strategy.
Right, right. And I don't think people realize that. So that leads to my next question around how important is cybersecurity for an organization like SOAR 365? So you have CMMC requirements, but you also have a lot of personal data. I mean, you have HIPAA data.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a huge requirement, and it's foundational to everything we do. So our strategy is, you know, be high touch with individuals, be high touch with service delivery. enable the agency with high tech.
Right.
And then you've got to have high trust. You can't do any of that unless you buttoned up security, privacy, information, access to information. It's all strategically important. And it's been a huge challenge in order to get right. And
right.
we've been working on this for, you know, the last 5 years, and we've made steady progress. We know the gaps, and I think we'll close those gaps within two years. But it's strategically important because we can't have a data breach. You can't.
No, you cannot.
You know, you can't have sensitive information on individuals in the public view.
Particularly some of it would be heartbreaking to me. It's heartbreaking anyway when, you know, personal information gets out there. But if you have PII that gets out there on someone who maybe has an intellectual disability, that for me, I don't know why, but it feels so much worse. It feels more invasive, and it feels like unless the caretakers, the caregivers are even know, they might not know. And you could run into things like people making disability claims or, you know, just crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, multi-factor authentication, single sign-on, conditional access policies, things like that, data loss prevention, it's all part of a defense in depth strategy
right.
that we're deploying. Perimeter level security, you know, extending that to the cloud, making sure you've got identity buttoned up. I mean, there's a lot in it
right.
that business users don't understand.
No.
And, you know, when there's an impact on high convenience, that's where conflict happens.
MFA.
So, yeah.
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 It is amazing to me how many end users push back on MFA when they deal with it with their banks and their, you know, all their personal stuff all the time. And for me, you should take the same amount of care with your business data, yeah. if not more.
And occasionally we'll have a scenario, a service scenario where an encrypted email makes it harder for the recipient to respond to
right.
what's going on, because the encryption rules automatically, you know, encrypted content that the person that was sending the message was not anticipating would be encrypted.
Right.
So based on pattern matching and things like that.
Right.
So.
Right. That's interesting. I didn't realize you all were doing that. So shifting gears a little bit, do you see any potential for generative AI in?
I do. We are still preparing the groundwork to get there, and I'm trying to make the business case for some of the things that we need to shore up. I'm talking about data classification.
Absolutely, it's the first thing you got to do.
You know, yeah. information, you know, labeling documents and files and things like that. So, but the huge opportunity for us is on our electronic care system, because it's core to everything that we do, and empowering in the creation of treatment plans or daily progress notes with AI generative capability to, you know, improve the completeness, the accuracy, and the quality of notes,
right?
So that we have a good record about the services we provided during the day,
right?
And that people don't necessarily want to do that part of their job. I mean, the reason people come to work at SOAR 365 is to work with individuals
right.
who have disabilities and make a difference. And so providing care and providing the supports is why they're there. They're not they don't want to do the transactional part.
Right.
So anything that we can do to alleviate that burden and improve overall quality is significant.
Yeah, any concerns around, so I would assume that most people know kind of generally how generative AI works, but ChatGPT in particular, and actually Copilot, which is uses ChatGPT as its foundation. The way it really works is it anticipates the next word in a sentence. And so, you know, that's why it's really great at, you prompt it to write you a blog and it'll anticipate words. Any concerns with that as it relates to preparing notes? Like,
of course. If the regulators are going to say the note has to be different every day, it has to accurately account for how we served and supported an individual throughout the day. They're not going to want a software algorithm to write a daily progress note. But in terms of helping a direct support professional document, you
right.
know, so it's an assistant. It's
right.
not. It's not in place of.
Right.
So
where I could see it being, knowing the, this much that I do about what y'all do, where I could see it being helpful is if there are things that need to have to that have to happen with a client every day, and you need to do X.
That's exactly
therapeutic,
right.
you know, and Y medicine, and this needs to happen at this time, and you write a book. How did they perceive that? You know, how
yeah.
did they react to it? Where I could see it being really useful is asking those questions, recording those responses, and then translating that into the case notes.
And there's a tool that our vendor has. We've been looking at that as we go to annual user conferences.
Mm-hmm.
We just haven't gotten to the point where
right.
you know, it's roadmapped. It hasn't been funded or prioritized yet. But you know, I have to work sometimes 2 years in advance
of right.
when we're actually going to do something.
Right.
So we are definitely interested in that and looking in that. And I use ChatGPT all the time.
I do every day. Yeah.
I'm terrible at writing policies and procedures. I just don't think that way.
Right.
And that's been a game changer for me to understand how to document our internal controls.
Right.
I'm a software developer, not a,
right.
you know.
Right,
so,
right. It's funny because I was at a conference 2 weeks ago now where there were a bunch of partners like us, and some of them did software development, and they are already using AI to create the code and using the software developers to do the QA on the code.
Yes.
Which for me is just mind-blowing. I mean, and seems backwards on top of it. Yeah, yeah, it's mind-blowing to me. I look at all of the changes that we have seen in the past 2 years. Like, if you had told me in late 2021 that we would be having, AI create images.
Right.
And have them be good.
Yes.
I would have said, no way, absolutely no way.
You know, that's where the imagination comes into play,
right,
in terms of innovation and technology delivery. And I think the real thing, I think the best is yet to come.
Oh, I agree.
I think this period, we're coming into 2029, and I've told our leadership team, between 2029 and 2045, there is going to be a rapid game-changing technology landscape. And, you know, for the last 20 years, society has gone through a number of innovations that have led up to the point where we are today. Right. But what I'm seeing the potential for is going to be revolutionary.
Well, and if you look at, so the pace of adoption, you think about, you know, you and I are of the generation that we were working before the internet, and we were working before cell phones were really super common. You know, I had a pager. I don't know about you,
but I
had a pager. And if you think about, you know, when the internet became a thing and the rate of adoption around that, it took a few years for sure. Mm-hmm. AI is completely different. The rate of adoption and the rate of transformation, and it's escalating so fast that it's mind-blowing to me.
And the thing about implementing an environment or enabling an environment with AI is people, it's going to be a major shift for people.
Oh, absolutely.
And training leaders, training managers, training frontline workers how to think differently about their work style.
Right.
And at my age, I face that because I'm like, oh my gosh, can I even make this shift? You know, with Teams,
right,
you know, with the work that's going on there, and the fact that you don't have to take notes anymore.
You get
meeting summaries. Well, some days I remember to use that, and some days I don't. And and so that's what I'm thinking about, is how do we embed that uplift across the entire workforce?
Yeah, I'll tell you that what we did in that case was we turned it on by default, and you have to choose to turn it off.
Turn it off.
Which has changed the game entirely. I mean, we're even seeing things like writing it into a statement of work where we are going to use AI to capture notes with you, the customer, and provide that to you. For us, that's a great sales tool also, because if someone hasn't experienced that, they don't realize the power that's there. And it's gotten good. I mean, it's what we're playing with now that is really interesting is, you know, and I know you experience this, in hybrid meetings where you've got a person, maybe two or three people remote, and then you've got a room full of folks. Right now, it's not great because if you use that Teams notes capture, you get the room and you can't differentiate between the voices.
Yeah.
But what we're playing with now are using Teams smart speakers and smart microphones and letting Teams recognize the individual speakers in the room. And then preparing the notes. And again, it's a game changer on those hybrid meetings, because I've sat at the other end of a hybrid meeting. It's really hard to tell who's speaking, but if you've got transcription turned on, you can see who's speaking. You can read it along if maybe the microphone isn't good.
Right.
But more importantly, the notes on the other end are absolutely amazing.
We've enabled a few meeting rooms with some basic hybrid video capabilities, but that's an area that we need to invest more in, and we haven't had the funding
aside, when we get it working here, I'll bring you over and show you.
Well, I'd love to see it.
I think for you all, having sat in many of those meetings, both in the meeting room and remotely, I think it would be a game changer for you, for sure. So yeah, I would love to. Once we get that working, I'll definitely show it to you. So what do you see, and we've talked about it a little bit, is the next big thing in technology that could have a positive impact on SOAR 365 and nonprofits in general?
Well, process automation, it's been in flight for a long time in the industry, and every year there's an advance and an advance, but really bringing that together with robotic automation, AI, process automation, I think could be a real game changer. And we're still trying to empower people to work at a higher level, you know, and get rid of the mundane activities.
Right.
Just on the back office side, I'm looking at AP automation because I'm an approver of invoices for payment. And so there's a lot to empower and enable on the back office side with getting work completed. But the transformative opportunity is just imagine an individual who has an intellectual disability. A lot of the work that we do is in prompting them to do their next thing.
Right.
And that can be activities of daily living, like combing your hair, brushing your teeth. Imagine if there was a robotic assistant that helped with that, you know, even at home.
Right.
You know, like, hey, it's time to brush your teeth, or it's time to take your medicine. things like that.
Yeah.
Are, you know, you think about assistive technologies, we often think about how do we replace the keyboard, or how do we get a mouse, or speech enabled, visual impaired kinds of things. But in terms of helping people who are growing older,
right? I was just thinking, I might sit.
Or who have a physical disability, or who have an intellectual disability. There are opportunities there. And there's just not a supply of labor anymore. I mean, the whole world is dealing with, you know, how do we put people to work in the right roles? And we're going to face a labor shortage. And the only way to solve for this is through, you know, humanoid type robotic process automation. And Japan has been a leader in this area because they have an aging population and they need, you know, people don't make pancakes, right?
You know,
the robots make the pancakes. So you're seeing this a lot in the food service industry. That's a pioneer. Mm-hmm. Grocery stores have eliminated a lot of things. So there's opportunity for human service organizations to leverage game changing, innovative, creative solutions.
I think about it even just with having an aging father, you know, things like exactly that, remembering to take your medication at the correct time and did you take it, or, you know, you have this appointment today, pre-scheduling the Uber, you know, kind of all of that. Because if you have an aging parent that lives by themselves, which many of us do, and in my case, my father's on the other side of the country. Unfortunately, I have sisters that live within, you know, 75 miles of him. But there are things that need to happen that we all want to make sure are happening.
Right.
But without hiring somebody to do it, you don't know.
Right.
That's super interesting to me.
And the other thing is governments and funders, you know, look at quality from an after the fact, you know, did you document your notes? Did you do this? Are the claims being paid correctly? All of that's in arrears. If you think about taking all of the regulatory requirements, putting them on the front side of service delivery, so that their requirements are built in up front rather than, because you can't inspect quality in after an event has already happened.
Right.
All you can do is lay down a penalty.
Right.
And think about the effort that legislators and administrators in the world that we live in build into requirements on the back end.
Right.
And if there's a shift to the front,
Right.
You get better return on your investment
right.
at a governance level.
Right, right, right. So we have just a couple more questions. The first one is, what advice do you have for aspiring CIOs or technology leaders in the nonprofit space?
The first thing I would say is use your imagination. In order to be innovative and creative, you've got to envision the future and a future state. And I rely on intellectual curiosity
right.
and imagination in order to see into the future, to plot a course or a direction. It doesn't necessarily have to be exact, but you know, to be able to see forward. And then to formulate a strategy that allows your team and your organization to get there. Part of that is informed risk-taking, but allowing your people to fail early and fail often along that journey, because it's one discovery after
right.
another in order to get there. And the other thing is, I would encourage people to think out of, you know, one way to say this is think out of the box, but don't let yourself be controlled or constrained by artificial boundaries. I believe in limitless opportunities and limitless experiences along the way. And as I observe people in the world, I see people who oftentimes grow comfortable or stay comfortable
right.
within that box
right.
or within that limit. I'm not, I would never have been successful working in one department where I just stayed within that department. The joy of IT is
you learn everything.
You crawl across the entire
yeah.
agency and you discover everything and you learn a little bit about everybody's job and what they do.
Yeah.
That's where I like to be. And so any CIO or individual who wants to be a CIO, I strongly encourage get out of the box you're in
yeah.
and get out there.
Yeah, yeah. I tell people the most important thing is you have to be willing to continue to learn.
Absolutely.
Because you're never going to know it all. And the other thing, and I tell my staff this, is that the answer can't be, it can't be done. That's never the appropriate answer. When I ask to have something happen, if you come back to me and you say it can't be done, I'm going to say, okay, let's pretend that there are no boundaries on this. How would you do it? Like, if there were no rules, what would you need to get this done? And let's figure that out.
You know, I learned a long time ago, you got to find a way to say yes.
Exactly.
Okay. So the core competency on the journey to finding a way to say yes is negotiation.
Right.
Okay. So,
right.
So
right.
what people tend to do is say, I want this, and say, no, we don't have people or funding, and we can't do this. You have to negotiate. You have to say, well, I can't do it this month. How about next month?
The resources I need to do this.
Or these are the resources I need. That's
yeah.
exactly right.
Yeah.
And so there's a negotiation skill set and competency there to get people to say
yeah.
yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. You have to find a way to say yes.
Yeah.
I think you're right. So most importantly, how can people engage to support SOAR 365?
Well, we use strategic volunteers, and we have a very robust volunteer strategy. We have a certification that says we are really good at leveraging volunteers. So there are lots of volunteer opportunities. You can go to our website, soar365.org, to see those. But strategic volunteers are something that we need to leverage more of. And so when I say that, you know, there are plenty of opportunities for, you know, coming to our facilities and, you know, painting the buildings
right.
at summer camp or doing something like that, beautification projects. But the real value is in either engaging with our individuals that we're serving or strategically helping. So in my case, getting my team to understand AI better.
Right.
Right. So engaging with somebody that could say, hey, I can give you 3-4 days or a week, or hey, I can help you build something for free. That's right. If it's defined correctly, that's a game changer for us.
Or even, you know, sometimes it's hard for people to give 3 or 4 days because they're working professionals. But even, hey, I'll spend an hour a week on a video call with you and give you some training.
So, for example, policy guidance, policy development and guidance for somebody like me, where we look at one policy every 2 weeks.
Right.
Or one policy a month or something like that.
Right.
Would be a good way to break that down.
Right.
So I encourage volunteer engagement and as a first opportunity because that gets you closer to the work. And I have found when people are close to the work, they develop a passion for the work.
Right.
And so once you have a passion for what we're doing, then you can help engage or be a champion for fundraising and other activities. Mm-hmm. And so unfortunately, the world we live in, the services we provide, the reimbursements for those services don't always match what they cost to deliver.
Right.
So we need help. We need financial support to close the gap there. And, you know, that's the next step along that journey.
So volunteer opportunities, charitable giving, kind of all of that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming in. Really appreciate you having you.
Well, thanks, Ro. It's been good to be with you.
Yeah. It's great to catch up, too.
Yeah, sure is.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right.
All right.